The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is the London Visited podcast on your favourite podcast provider, bringing to you the facts, history and information about different parts of this great capital. If you have been to London, are planning on visiting, live here or just love London from afar, then this is the podcast for you.
Hi there, I'm Steve and welcome to our podcast. We're here for all things London and to tell you more behind some of the iconic places and people in London's history. In this episode, we go back to HMS Belfast, moored on the South Bank opposite the Tower of London, to give you more history into this fantastic tourist attraction and one that I would recommend to absolutely anyone. Don't forget to visit and subscribe to our YouTube channel, London Visited, to see videos covering HMS Belfast and so many other places around London. Also, if you love the podcast and the channel, why not join us as a member? Join our group of what we like to call our London Visited Crown Jewels, where there are many different benefits, including a members-only monthly podcast. Have a look by going to patreon.com/London Visited. And now to this week's podcast. With the end of the Second World War, Belfast remained in the Far East, conducting a number of cruises to ports in Japan, China and Malaya, and setting sail for Portsmouth on the 20th of August 1947. There she paid off into reserve and underwent a refit during which her turbines were opened for maintenance. She also received more guns in place of some of the ones she had already, and she also had new radar equipment fitted. She was recommissioned on the 22nd of September 1948 and, before returning to the Far East, visited her home city of Belfast, arriving on the 20th of October. The following day, the 21st of October 1948, the ship's company marked Trafalgar Day with a march through the city. The next day, Belfast took charge of a silver ship's bell, a gift from the people of Belfast. She sailed for Hong Kong on the 23rd of October to join the Royal Navy's Far East Fleet, arriving in late December. By 1949, the political situation in China was precarious, with the Chinese Civil War moving towards its conclusion. As flagship of the 5th Cruiser Squadron, Belfast was the Far Eastern Station's headquarters ship during the April 1949 Armistice incident, in which a British sloop, the HMS Armistice, was trapped in the Yangtze River by the Communist People's Liberation Army. Belfast remained in Hong Kong until 1949, sailing for Singapore on the 18th of January 1950. There, she underwent a minor refit between January and March 1950, and in June she joined the Far East Fleet's summer cruise. On the 25th of June 1950, while Belfast was visiting Hakko Date in Japan, North Korean forces crossed the 38th parallel, starting the Korean War. With the outbreak of the Korean War, Belfast became part of the United Nations Naval Forces. Originally part of the US Navy's Task Force 77, Belfast was detached in order to operate independently on the 5th of July 1950. During July and early August 1950, Belfast undertook coastal patrols and was spaced at Sabesso in Japan's Nagasaki Prefecture. From the 19th of July, Belfast supported troops fighting around Yangdok, accompanied by USS Juno. That day, Belfast fired an accurate 350-round bombardment from her 6-inch guns and was praised by an American admiral as a straight-shooting ship. On the 6th of August, she sailed for the UK for a short but needed refit, after which again she sailed for the Far East and back to Sabesso on the 31st of January 1951. During 1951, Belfast mounted a number of coastal patrols and bombarded a variety of targets. On the 1st of June, she arrived at Singapore for refitting, arriving back on patrol on the 31st of August. In September, Belfast provided anti-aircraft cover for salvage operation to recover a crashed enemy MiG-15 jet fighter. She conducted further bombardments and patrols before receiving a month's leave from operations, returning to action on the 23rd of December. In 1952, Belfast continued her coastal patrol duties. In July that year, Belfast was hit by enemy fire while engaging an artillery battery on Wallasey Ree Island. A 75mm shell struck a forward compartment, killing a British sailor of Chinese origin in his hammock. This was the only time Belfast was hit by enemy fire during her Korean service. In September 1952, Belfast was relieved by two other town-class cruisers, HMS Birmingham and HMS Newcastle, and sailed back to the UK. She had steamed over 80,000 miles in the combat zone and fired more than 8,000 rounds from her 6-inch guns during the Korean War. She paid off in Chatham on the 4th of November 1952 and entered reserve at Davenport on the 1st of December. In reserve, Belfast's future was uncertain. Post-war defence cuts made manpower-intensive cruisers excessively costly to operate, and it was not until March 1955 that the decision was taken to modernise Belfast. Work began in January 1956. Although described as an extended refit, the cost of £5.5 million was substantial for this large middle-aged cruiser. Changes included various amendments to her armoury and also to her defence systems, and protecting key parts of the ship against nuclear, biological or chemical attack. This last consideration meant significantly enlarging and enclosing her bridge, creating a two-tiered five-sided superstructure which radically altered her appearance. Her boiler rooms were also given remote control so they could still be run in the event of a nuclear, biological or chemical attack, as the boiler rooms themselves were not protected. The most significant change was better accommodations for a smaller crew of fitting the post-war needs. Her tripod masts were replaced by lattice masts, and timber decking replaced with steel everywhere except the quarterdeck. The overall effect was to create a cruiser significantly more habitable, but different internally and to a degree in external appearance from wartime cruisers, but still essentially a surface warfare anti-Soldov cruiser, with anti-aircraft defence updated for point defence only out to 4 kilometres. Belfast recommissioned at Davenport in May 1959. Her close-range armament and also radar systems were refitted. Belfast then arrived in Singapore in December 1959 and spent most of 1960 at sea on exercise, calling at ports in Hong Kong, Borneo, India, Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, Australia, the Philippines and Japan. In January 1961, Belfast recommissioned under the command of Captain Morgan Giles. On her final foreign commission, Belfast joined a number of exercises in the Far East, and in December 1961, she provided the British Guard of Honour for the independence ceremony in Darussalam. In 1961, plans were drawn up for the conversion of Belfast to a hybrid helicopter cruiser for amphibious operations. The two aft 6-inch turrets would be removed to accommodate a helicopter deck and two hangars, capable of housing four Westland Wessex helicopters, while the 4-inch guns would be replaced by davits for four LCA landing craft. Only one of the ship's two boiler rooms would be used, which, together with the reductions in armament, would allow for the ship's crew to be reduced, so freeing up to carry troops. Two infantry companies, 30 officers and 230 other ranks would be carried. The plan was rejected in December 1961, as the time required to carry out the conversions was too great.
In Puerto Rico, we call ourselves Boricua. We are proud, passionate, and full of life. On our island, adventure finds you. Strangers aren't strangers for long. The size of the audience doesn't change the beauty of the music. And we celebrate every last ray of sun. Live Boricua.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The ship left Singapore in March 1962 for the UK, sailing east via Hong Kong, Guam and Pearl Harbor, San Francisco, Seattle, British Columbia, Panama and Trinidad. She arrived at Portsmouth on the 19th of June 1962. Recommissioned in July, she made a final visit to Belfast from the 23rd to the 29th of November, before paying off into reserve on the 25th of February 1963. In July 1963, Belfast was recommissioned for the last time, with a crew of the Royal Navy Reserve and a number of sea cadets flying the flag of the Admiral commanding reserves, Rear Admiral Hugh Martel, Belfast, sailed for Gibraltar, in company with 16 Royal Navy Reserve minesweepers for a two-week exercise in the Mediterranean on the 10th of August. Belfast returned to Davenport on the 24th of August 1963 and underwent a short refit to prepare her for paying off into reserve, which occurred in December 1963. In January 1966, parts of the ship and power systems were reactivated, and from May 1966 to 1970, she served as an accommodation ship, taking over duties from Sheffield, moored at Fareham Creek, for the Reserve Division at Portsmouth. While Belfast lay at Fareham Creek, the Imperial War Museum, Britain's National Museum of 20th Century Conflict, became interested in preserving a 6-inch turret. The turret would represent a number of classes of cruiser, then disappearing from service, and would complement the museum's pair of British 15-inch naval guns. On the 14th of April 1967, museum staff visited Gambia, a Crown Colony-class cruiser also moored in Fareham Creek at the time. Following the visit, the possibility was raised of preserving an entire ship. Gambia had already severely deteriorated, so attention turned to the possibility of saving Belfast. The Imperial War Museum, the National Maritime Museum, and the Ministry of Defence established a joint committee, which reported in June 1968 that the scheme was practical and economic. However, in early 1971, the Paymaster General decided against preservation. On the 4th of May 1971, Belfast was reduced to disposal to await scrapping. Following the government's refusal, a private trust was formed to campaign for the ship's preservation. The Belfast Trust was established. Its chairman was Rear Admiral Sir Morgan Morgan-Giles, captain of the Belfast from January 1961 to July 1962. As a Member of Parliament for Winchester, Morgan-Giles addressed the House of Commons on the 8th of March 1971. He described Belfast as being in a really wonderful state of preservation, and that saving her for the nation represented a case of grasping the last opportunity. Following the Trust's efforts, the government agreed to hand over Belfast to the trustees in July 1971, with Vice Admiral Sir Donald Gibson as a first director. At a press conference in August, the Trust announced Operation Seahorse, the plan to bring Belfast to London. She was towed from Portsmouth to London via Tilbury, where she was fitted out as a museum. She was towed to her berth above Tower Bridge on the 15th of October 1971 and settled into a huge hull that had been dredged in the riverbed. Then she was attached to two dolphins which guide her during the rise and fall of the tide. She was open to the public on Trafalgar Day, the 21st of October 1971. The date was significant as Belfast was the first naval vessel to be saved for the nation since HMS Victoria, Lord Nelson's flagship at the Battle of Trafalgar. Though no longer part of the Royal Navy, HMS Belfast was granted a special dispensation to allow it to continue to fly the White Ensign. By 1977, the financial position of the HMS Belfast Trust had become marginal, and the Imperial War Museum sought permission to merge the trust into the museum. In January 1978, the Secretary of State for Education and Service, Shirley Williams, accepted the proposal, stating that HMS Belfast is a unique demonstration of an important phase of our history and technology. The ship was transferred to the museum in March 1978 and became the Imperial War Museum's third branch, Duxford Aerodrome having been acquired in 1976. In October 1998, the HMS Belfast Association was formed to reunite former members of the ship's company. The Imperial War Museum's sound archives also seeks to record oral history interviews with former crewmen. When Belfast was first opened to the public, visitors were limited to the upper decks and forward superstructure. Currently, 9 decks are open to the public. Access to the ship is via a walkway which connects the quarterdeck with the pedestrianised footpath on the south bank of the River Thames. The Imperial War Museum's guidebook to HMS Belfast divides the ship into 3 broad sections. The first of these, Life on Board the Ship, focuses on the experience of serving at sea. Restored compartments, some populated with dressed figures, illustrate the crew's living conditions and the ship's various facilities, such as the sick bay, galley, laundry, chapel, mess decks, and NAFI. Since 2002, school and youth groups have been able to stay on board HMS Belfast overnight, sleeping in bunks on the restored 1950s mess deck. The second section, the inner workings, below the waterline and protected by the ship's armoured belt, contains core mechanical, electrical, and communication systems, as well as engine and boiler rooms and other compartments, including a transmitting station. housing the ship's Admiralty fire control table, a mechanical computer, the forward steering position and one of Belfast's 6-inch shell rooms and magazines. The third section, action stations, includes the upper deck and forward superstructure with the ship's armament, fire control and command facilities. Areas open to the public include the operations room, Admiral's Bridge and gun direction platform. The operations room was restored to its appearance during the exercise Pony Express, a large British-Australian-American joint exercise held off North Borneo in 1961. The reinterpretation included an interactive audio-visual plotting table. So, I hope you've enjoyed our two-part look overall at HMS Belfast. The massive ship that sits underneath the Shard that so many people see, but not enough people go on. And it's one heck of a brilliant experience, because you really do get across the whole ship. If you'd like to make contact with us or suggest any places you'd like us to feature in future podcasts, you can let me know through our website, londonvisited.co.uk, or our social media. It's that easy. Thanks for listening. Really hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we'll see you soon on the next one. Bye.
Thanks for listening, and please don't forget to subscribe to get more shows direct to your device. Also, why not visit our London Visited YouTube channel to get even more of London. Catch you soon on the next one.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Peer Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pair.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.